Good evening, everyone. Brishos Demar Dasar, Brishos Rav. It's a great privilege to be back here with you again. It was a wonderful privilege to be here with you on Hanukkah. It was definitely one of the highlights of my Yom Tov, and it's beautiful to be here with you in just the days leading up to Pesach, and how beautiful it is, you know, as the rabbi of a shul, I would have to agree with the Rav's words that communities are often not built by Rabbanim, but communities are absolutely built through a synergistic partnership between Rabbanim and between committed lay leaders. And how beautiful and how fortunate you are to have had someone like Getzel Ben Yecheskel Mendel, who apparently was such a pillar of this community for so many years. We hope that in the merit of our learning, in the merit of our Talmud Torah, his neshama should have an aliyah and his family a nechama.
Amen.
So I want to share with you, you might have heard that the holiday of Pesach is coming. Right? People are a bit abuzz. And I often say when it comes to Pesach, that sometimes we get so caught up in all of the details that we lose out on the opportunity to really embrace the totality of the message. As a people, we are privileged to have 613 commandments. Each of those mitzvos, each of those commandments emanate, or I should say, give off such incredible meaning and profundity, each in their own way. But the truth is, Pesach itself occupies a very specific niche, a very exalted spot within not only our calendar, but within our national psyche. You know, the Talmud records a dispute as to from what point in time do we reckon the new year? Do we begin the new year from the month of Tishrei, the month of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot, or do we go ahead and reckon the new year from the month of Nisan? So the truth is, the answer is both. In certain respects, certainly from a calendrical perspective, Tishrei is the beginning of the year, but the truth is, from a national perspective, from an identity perspective, it is the month of Nisan, and specifically the Yom Tov of Pesach, which is fundamental, which is a new beginning for us on so many different levels. There is so much power in these coming days, so much power in this Yom Tov, the opportunity to begin anew as the world itself, as nature begins to replenish and to refresh itself. What happens in the external world has the ability to happen on the inside also. There's an energy with Pesach. You know, sometimes we're just so exhausted from all the preparation that we don't have any additional energy for all of the beautiful meaning. But it's so important that the details are important. Judaism is all about the details. But we have to make sure that it doesn't just become about the details, and that we find the opportunity and the headspace to be able to focus a little bit more on the greater message of this Yom Tov. So with that in mind, I wanted to draw your attention. I wanted to use as a springboard for our conversation tonight, the Haggadah. I'm sure like in many of our homes, the Pesach Seder is an incredible, incredible opportunity. For many families, it's the one time where everybody's able to get together. The idea of the Pesach Seder is a melding, a generational melding. The idea is that parents are supposed to give over the beauty and the majesty of Judaism to their children. The children, of course, sit there soaking in every single word and just want the Seder to go on and on and on, like everyone wants, right? And again, all kidding aside, putting together a meaningful Seder is an art form. Knowing again when to talk and when to move, knowing when to be ma'arich, to prolong, and when to be makatzer, and kind of when to shorten things up, is an art form that requires an incredible amount of preparation. But if you look at number one on your sheets, again, there's more on these sheets than we're going to cover here tonight, but at least you could see it on the inside, and the sheets are yours, so whatever we don't cover together, you could take. So the Haggadah begins in a fascinating way. The Haggadah begins with the following statement, or the following paragraph. Halach ma'anya diachalu avasana ba'arad dimitzrayim. This is the bread of affliction that our ancestors ate in the land of Egypt. Kol dichvin yesei v'yechol, all who are hungry, let them come and eat. Kol ditzrich yesei, all who are in need, let them come and join us for a Pesach. Now here it translates it as Pesach Seder, but really called Ditzrich Yesev Yisach means whoever is in need of the Paschal Lamb, right? Whoever is in need of the Seder, come and join us. Hashata Hacha, this year we are here. Lashana Haba Ba'arad Yisrael, next year, the land of Israel. Hashata Avdi, this year we are servants. Lashana Haba B'nei Chorin. In the coming year, ultimately again, we will be free. We will be free. So, a paragraph that we're familiar with. Usually, almost everyone's still awake at this point in time in the Seder, because it's about like 9-10 minutes in. So remember again, just to give you context, by this point in time, we've made Kiddush, Kaddish, Urchatz, we've done the interesting washing before going ahead and dipping our vegetable or whatever you use for karpas into the salt water. Yachatz, we've broken the middle matzah already. The afikoman's been stolen by the kids, hopefully. And now we begin, again, the official, we'll call it Seder, with this Halach Ma'anyo. Now this paragraph is intriguing. You could spend an entire night just on this paragraph. Because this paragraph already from the beginning is an anomaly. Why is it an anomaly? The language of the Haggadah is Hebrew. The Haggadah is written in the Haggadah, the primary part of the Haggadah, Magid, which is the retelling of the Exodus narrative, is in Hebrew. Yet, this particular paragraph is in Aramaic, which automatically tells us that it's an add-on to the Haggadah. If you notice in the Haggadah, by the way, there are Aramaic bookends. We begin with Halach Ma'anya, and of course, one of the last songs in the Haggadah is Chagadya, which again, in and of itself, what is that talking about, right? We've got kids, we've got people, kids eating cats eating this, dogs eating this. So again, leaving that, we'll cover that a different time. But the idea is these are Aramaic bookends. These were added on at different times in history. The original part of the Haggadah is the one that is in Hebrew. Anything in Aramaic was added on. And they weren't all added on at the same time. Chagadya, in fact, I'll give you a little bit of Seder homework. Chagadya is the narrative of the diaspora Jew. Each and every one of those steps in Chagadah represents a different stage of our 2,000-year exile. So that was added on much later on in history, after the Haggadah, the primary part of the Haggadah was already cemented. And there are many problems with this particular paragraph of Halach Ma'anya. A, that it's in Aramaic, and B, there's a much more fundamental issue. What's the fundamental issue? We say, Kol dichthin yeseh v'yechol. Whoever is hungry, come and eat. What's the problem? You already started. Remember, who are you talking to when you say this? You're talking to the people around your table. Hopefully, if they're at your table, it's because you let them into your house. Right? Hopefully, if they're at your table, it means that they were invited to join you for the Seder. So who are you talking to? Sounds like such a noble statement. Let all who are hungry come and eat. To the people around my table who are already invited. Who am I talking to? Kol ditzrich yeseh v'yisa. Whoever needs a place for Pesach, come and eat. So again, if we're making a real invitation, then what should you do? Number one. So first of all, before, let this be the first paragraph of the Seder, even before you make Kiddush. Number two, where should you be making this declarative statement? At your door. Remember again, we do this, we open up the door towards the end of the Seder. Remember, the last part of the Seder shifts. The last part of the Seder is messianically oriented. We initiate that part of the Seder by pouring the cup of Elijah, the Kosh Elio, and that begins. The Seder is made up of three parts. We recount what happened in Egypt. We recount the servitude. Then we go on to redemption. And then after, the meal becomes the messianic part of the Seder. All of that is focused to incredible salvation that Emir Hashem awaits us. So if this is a real invitation, then A, say it at the beginning of the Seder, and B, go to the door, right? Make a real statement. So obviously, we're not doing it at the beginning. And I'm talking to the people who are already around my table. So obviously, it's not a real invitation. If it's not a real invitation, then what is it? So there are many different interpretations. I'm just going to share with you a few. If you look at number two on your sheet, this is from the Haggadah Shel Pesach of the Minchas Asher. The Minchas Asher is Rav Asher Weiss, who's one of the incredible Torah luminaries in Eretz Yisrael. And he's a prolific writer as well, prolific speaker. And he wrote a commentary on the Haggadah. And in the Haggadah, he has something dramatic. He explains as follows. He explains that during the times of the temple, remember again, when the temple stood, we had the Paschal Lamb. Now the Paschal Lamb was something very interesting because, interestingly enough, when did you eat the Paschal Lamb? The Paschal Lamb was not your primary meal. The Paschal Lamb, the Korban Pesach, the Gemara says, was Nechal Ala Sova. It was consumed after you were sated. So you had a meal, and then dessert was the Korban Pesach. Dessert was the Paschal Lamb. In order to partake of the Paschal Lamb, you had to be part of a group at the time that the lamb was slaughtered. So meaning, there's no such thing in the times of the temple as last minute company on the Seder night. You had to know what group you were a part of, what chabura, what family unit you were a part of for your Paschal lamb during the day. During the day, because remember, the Paschal lamb was slaughtered already on the 14th during the day. So Rav Weiss explains so beautifully as follows. Imagine the following scene. The temple stands. So I'm a person with a Karban Pesach. I'm a person with a lamb. Maybe I don't have such a large family. One lamb for the whole family is a lot. The goal is not to leave over anything. And as much as we're Jews, and we try never to leave over anything, right? At the end of the day, a whole lamb, perhaps for a smaller family, especially when it's dessert, not the primary meal, might be difficult. So Rav Weiss says something amazing. So what would the Jew do during temple times? So he says the people who had extra spots at their table would go into the marketplace on the morning of the 14th, the morning of Erev Pesach. And what would they say? They would call out, Kol dichvin yesei v'yechol, Kol ditzrich yesei v'yifsach. They would make an announcement. Does anyone need a place for Karban Pesach? Does anyone need to be part of a group? Does anyone need to be part of a chabura? And they would go ahead and they would make this announcement in the marketplace. And what language would they make this announcement in? Take a wild guess. Aramaic. Right, why Aramaic? Because that was the vernacular. Certainly during the Second Temple era. So they would go out, and Rav Weiss says something amazing. Do you know why we say Halach Ma'anya? Halach Ma'anya is our way of remembering the temple. Is our way of remembering our past. Now the Jew remembers their past for two different reasons. We have two different sets of practices when it comes to the temple. Some of them are called Zecher L'Churban, some of them are called Zecher L'Mikdash. Some of them ultimately are to remember the temple's been destroyed, and they are there to engender a sense of mourning, and other practices are there to engender an anticipatory excitement for the building of the third temple, for messianic redemption, for the beautiful future that awaits us. So the Minchas Asher, Rav Weiss says so beautifully, that we begin with Halach Ma'anya because we remember what was. We remember that, you know, tonight, when you know, on Pesach night, if you go to shul and you meet someone who doesn't have a place for the Seder, can you bring them home with you? Absolutely. But why can we do that? We can do that because we don't yet have the temple. But as we begin the Seder, we take a moment to remember that which was. We take a moment to use the very words that our ancestors used over 2,000 years ago to be able to invite those who did not have a spot for the Karban Pesach to invite them to their homes. We use those same exact words as part of our Pesach experience. We use those same exact words as part of our Seder. So as we begin, you see, there is nothing more powerful than Jewish optimism. And there is nothing more powerful than Jewish hope. I want to tell you something amazing. In just a few moments after this, what do we say? Avodim hayinu lepara b'mitzrayim. We were slaves. You know, Egyptian servitude was not just about slavery. It was barbaric. The Egyptians treated us in a barbaric fashion. They decimated our families. They killed our children. We often think that it was just slave labor. It wasn't slave labor. It was genocide on many different levels. But yet at the same time, how do we begin to say there? I'm about to speak about servitude, but I also take a moment to remember what was in order to awaken myself the feeling and yearning for what will be. The Beis HaMikdash will come again. The temple will come again. Mashiach will come. And that day will come when on Erev Pesach, in addition to all of the running around that we're going to do, you're going to be schlepping your little lamb, calling out, Kol dichvin yesei v'yechol, kol ditzrich yesei v'yifsach. Does anyone need a place tonight? Tell me now. Tell me now, because I'm going to shech this lamb right now. If you get in now, you can be part of my group. But if you miss it, I'm sorry, I can't have you. We say those same words that were used thousands of years ago in a way of awakening within ourselves an anticipatory excitement that, God willing, we're going to use these words once again, Bekarov. We're going to use these words again very shortly. So that's the Minchas Asher's approach. One idea, to remember the temple and to go ahead and awaken within us a desire for the third temple, a desire for messianic redemption. But if you take a look at number three, Rabbi Soloveitchik, Rabbi Yosef Tov HaLevi Soloveitchik, in his commentary on the Haggadah, raises a very interesting question. He says, take a look at number three. I'm just going to read to you two lines. He says, Yesh la'ayin, lama maschilim es Haggadah b'halach ma'anya asekes b'ach nasas archim. So Rabbi Soloveitchik says something amazing. He says, why is it that we begin the Haggadah with Hachnasas Archim? The Hachnasas Archim, hospitality, is a very important We'll call it mitzvah, but it's more than just a mitzvah. It's almost like a mantra. The first patriarch, Abraham, was known for many things, but most of all was his hachnasas archim. Most of all was his tent, which was open on all sides to anyone and everyone. Not just his friends, not just people who believed like him, not just people who agreed with his political or theological or religious views, but his tent was open to everyone. This is part of our spiritual DNA, to be hospitable people, ultimately, again, who open our homes to anyone and everyone. Very important, Hachnasas Archim. But why is it here? What does this have to do with the Seder? I mean, again, Hachnasas Archim is important all of the time. It's important on Shabbos, it's important on Yom Tov, it's important during the week. Why does it occupy a major spot here in the Pesach Seder? And Rabbi Soloveitchik says something amazing. If you think of number 3 on the left-hand paragraph, Rabbi Soloveitchik writes, V'nira lomar, dihine eved eno yochol lahachnis archim. He says something amazing. He says, you know, a slave cannot engage in the mitzvah of hospitality. Why can't a slave engage in the mitzvah of hospitality? So there is a halachic principle, the hakai malon, mashekana eved, kana rabo, ve'im le'eved nechosim, ve'gam in lo bayis. So Rav Soloveitchik says something amazing. A slave cannot perform the mitzvah of hospitality. Why not? Because in order to perform the mitzvah of hospitality, what do you have to have? Stuff. You have to own something. You have to own a home. You have to own your food. You have to own your dishes. You have to own your dining room set. You have to own. If I don't own anything, then by definition, I can't be hospitable. So something amazing, Rabbi Soloveitchik, a slave cannot perform the mitzvah of hachnasas archim. Therefore, loch in maschilinas ha'agoda b'hachnasas archim. So Rabbi Soloveitchik says something amazing. Is this a real invitation to people? Is this a real invitation? And the answer is no. Of course it's not a real invitation. We've already begun the Seder. We already made Kiddush, which remember at the Seder night is not only Kiddush, but what? The first of the four cups. We're already underway. The door is closed. I'm talking to people already around my table. This is not a real invitation. Instead, what it is a declarative statement or a declarative manifestation of my freedom. What I'm saying is I am free. And how can I prove to you that I'm free? That tonight, if I want to have guests, tonight, if I want to perform the mitzvah of hachnasas archim of hospitality, I have the ability to do so. When I was a slave in Egypt, I could not do hachnasas archim. I could not engage in hospitality because I owned nothing. Now I'm free. And as a result of my freedom, I own stuff. And because I own stuff, I have the ability to open my home, open my life, open my heart to the other. So Rabbi Soloveitchik opens this up in a dramatic way, which is that in reality, this is not a real invitation, but rather, again, it's a manifestation of newfound freedom. I am free, and therefore, if I wanted to, I can go ahead and open up my home to all of those around me. To take this just a little bit further, if you take a look at number 4, this is much longer than what we're going to focus on. In one of the most beautiful Haggadahs that I've come across in the last number of years, is a Haggadah, or a commentary on the Haggadah, written by Rav Yisrael Meir Lau. Rabbi Lau was the chief rabbi of Israel, not the current Rabbi Lau, his father. So Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau was the chief rabbi of Israel, is currently the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. And those of you who know anything about Rabbi Lau, he is probably one of the most unique personalities of our generation. A survivor, one of the youngest survivors of Bergen-Belsen, and he's an individual who has, there are very few people who are loved and revered in all circles of the Jewish people. You might have heard, but as a people, we disagree on many things. And as a people, we tend to be exceptionally opinionated, which again is our strength. It's what's kept us. We are an Am Kishei Orof, we're a stiff-necked people. And so the truth is, you might revere certain people, I might revere certain people, this one reveres certain people, and generally, again, we might not agree on, quote-unquote, who are the great leaders of our generation. Rabbi Lau is one of those people who probably because of his life experiences, also because of just his remarkable avas Yisrael, his remarkable love for the Jewish people, is someone who is truly looked to in so many different circles. See, he wrote a commentary on Pirkei Avos. So in his commentary, he discusses Halach Ma'anya, number 4. And he tells a story. He tells the following story. He says that when he was chief rabbi, he conducted a Pesach Seder. Remember, in Israel, there's only one Seder. He conducted a Pesach Seder at an Air Force base. And he writes again, there were more than 1,000 people. Couldn't even imagine this. Right? More than 1,000 people in attendance for this particular Seder. And he's leading the Seder. So he gets up and he starts reading Halach Ma'anya. And he reads it in the Aramaic. He translates it into Hebrew. And in the middle, a young man gets up. He says, Kvod HaRav, excuse me, Rabbi. You know, I mean no disrespect, but. You know, those are the famous words, right? The but, right? I don't understand this. How can we say, Hashata Avdi L'shana Aba B'nei Chorin? What do you mean this year we're slaves, next year we're free? This young pilot stood up and says, I'm free. I was born free. I am free. I fight for our freedom every single day. I was never a slave and I don't plan on being a slave. What do you mean when we say, Hashata Hacha, this year we're here, L'shana Aba B'nei Chorin, next year we're in Israel? He says, I'm a Sabra. I was born here. I'm going to die here. I'm not going anywhere. So I'm sorry, Rabbi. Very nice prayer you got going on over here. Nice section on the Haggadah. But it's no longer relevant to me. And Rabbi Lau writes that it's an excellent question. And Rabbi Lau gives such a remarkable answer. And what's even more remarkable is that he thought about it in that moment. He said to this young pilot, he said, you know, I want you to understand that during my lifetime, I was privileged to have a connection with many great rabbis. And he discusses some of his teachers. Rav Shach, who was Rosh Yeshiva of Panovich, one of the great thinkers of the last generation of Eliyahu Lopian, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. These were the greatest rabbis of the Jewish. Rabbi Lau says, you know, I had the privilege to learn by each of them, but not only that, I had another distinct privilege, is that I used to spend the high holidays, the Yomim Noran, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, with these great men. And Rabbi Lau says, you know, I always found it very striking. You know, what's the major part of Yom Kippur davening? The major part of davening on Yom Kippur is Achit, Vidui. We confess. Hashamnu, Bagadnu, Gazalnu. Right? So those are the general sins. And then we have the section of the Achit. Right? Achit Shechatanu, for the sin that I've sinned, and fill in the blank here. There are 44 Achit. 44 Achit. So Rabbi Lau writes, you know, it's amazing that his most distinct memory of being in the shadow of these great men over the high holidays is how when they would say Hashamnu Baganu and Achit, they would begin to cry. They'd be so overcome by emotion that they would begin to cry. And Rabbi Lau says, you know, I never understood it. Why are they crying? He said, one thing I could tell you for sure, none of them committed most of the sins contained in the 44 Achit. I want to tell you something even better. Most of us don't commit most of the sins in the 44 Achates. There's some pretty serious stuff in there that most of us, Baruch Hashem, never do. Thank God, never do. Some stuff we do, some stuff we do often, some stuff we do well, some stuff we do with a smile. Right? But the serious ones, we don't really do. See, he always wondered, how could it be that Rav Shach, Rav Lopian, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach are crying as they clap Achet? So he says something amazing. He says, because he realized, Rabbi Lau says, only when I got older did I realize that they weren't just doing vidui for themselves. They were doing vidui, they were confessing the sins of the collective. That they understood that the tshuva, the repentance process of the high holidays, is not just about me as an individual. Because the Jew exists on two levels. There's personal me, and there's national me. So if you're Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, if you're Rav Shach, if you're Eliyahu Lopian, as individuals, you may have not committed those sins. But one thing is absolutely sure, certain, which is someone within our people did commit those sins. Maybe they're doing tshuva for it, maybe they're repenting for it, maybe they're not. And so these great rabbis took it upon themselves to repent on the part of the collective, to go ahead and literally again beat their chest, not for their own sins, but for the sins that another precious brother or another precious sister had gone ahead and committed. And Rabbi Lau says to this young pilot, if you take a look at letter C, he says, Hachuvahi, hey mochashvu rak alatzmam. You know what makes great people great? Is that they don't only think about themselves. Lo kolazman ani, va'ani, va'ani, tzarech lachshov al azulas. Life is about thinking about the other. Tzarech lachshov al klal yisrael. You have to think about your people as a whole, as a collective. Ki klal, ki kol yisrael even zebazeh. And he goes on, in the next sentence, he says, you're right, my young pilot. You were never a slave. And the truth is, again, you are privileged to be born and live your life in Israel. But what about all of your brothers and sisters who are enslaved to something? This piece is a little bit dated. Rabbi Lau speaks out, and what about your brothers and sisters behind the Iron Curtain? This was before the collapse of the Soviet Union. What about all of the Jews who are in a state of distress? What about all of those who are suffering? You know, my friends, if we're honest, all of us are enslaved to something. Some of us have the courage and the strength to break the shackles, and some of us remain enslaved for the duration of our lives. And so says Rabbi Lau to this young idealistic pilot, you're lucky. You're lucky that you're in Israel, and you're lucky that you're free. But there are many people who are not free physically. There are many people who are not free emotionally. And there are many people who are enslaved spiritually. So even if these words don't resonate for you as an individual, use this to daven for your brothers and sisters. Use this to think about the other. And what comes out from this is something absolutely amazing. If we marry these two concepts together, of Rabbi Soloveitchik and Rabbi Lau, it turns out that what we're trying to really focus on, Halach Ma'anya, is the true definition of freedom. What is freedom? You see, people often think freedom means the ability to do whatever you want. And the truth is, that's not true. We know as Jews that's not true. Why? Because remember again, we leave Egypt, yay, we're free. And then what happens 49 days later? We're given 613 commandments. And if that wasn't enough, we have a whole body of rabbinic law, right, that builds on those 613. So we know freedom does not mean the ability to do what we are not permitted to do. We have the free choice to do whatever we want, but ultimately, again, we choose, we actively choose to try to the best of our abilities, each of us in our own way, to live up to God's expectations. So if freedom is not the ability to do whatever I want, then what is freedom? And perhaps we could suggest, based on these two approaches, that at the end of the day, what freedom means is the ability to think beyond yourself. You see, the slave is preoccupied with one thing, and that is survival. The slave doesn't have the ability to think about anyone but himself. A person who is free has the ability, of course, we all think about ourselves, but the free person has the ability to think about the collective, to think about his community, to think about his family, to think about his people, to think about his nation, to think about his world. The truest definition of freedom is the ability to be self-transcendent, the ability to transcend the self, the ability to transcend egocentricity, the ability to live a life that's bigger than just the pursuit of my own interests. So Rabbi Soloveitchik says, that's why the first thing we go ahead and we do at the Pesach Seder is we make this mock invitation. It's not a real invitation, like I already said. It's a mock invitation. So I'm making a mock invitation because I'm trying to bring home the point that what am I to do with this newfound freedom? It's not about me. It's about what I can do for the other. It's about how I can give to the other. It's about how I can help the other. So ultimately, again, we say, Hashata Avdi L'Sham HaMenechor, this year we're slaves, next year we're free. I feel free. Hopefully you feel free. But we recognize that there are others who are enslaved to a variety of different things. And I have to figure out how to help them navigate out of their servitude. I want to share with you an incredible quote. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, former chief rabbi of Israel, also has a beautiful essays on the Haggadah. Former chief rabbi of England, I'm sorry, has the beautiful essays on the Haggadah. And he has a section, actually in Halach Ma'anya, where he quotes from Primo Levi. So Primo Levi was a survivor of the Holocaust who wrote a number of books, really profound psychological insight, psychologically insightful books onto the nature of survival. And ultimately, again, what a person does with traumatic circumstances. So Rabbi Sacks quotes from one of Primo Levi's books called If This Is Man. Listen to this. So Primo Levi discusses, he was in Auschwitz, and the Nazis, Yimach Shem V'Zichrom, saw the Russians approaching, and they left. They left. And they just left everyone. They left whoever survived was there. So look what he writes. This is the quote. He says, all prisoners who could walk were taken on the brutal death marches. The only people left in the camp were those too ill to move. For 10 days, they were left alone with only scraps of food and fuel. Levy describes how he worked to light a fire and bring some warmth to his fellow prisoners, many of them dying. Listen to this. He writes, when the broken window was repaired and the stove began to spread its heat, something seemed to relax in everyone. So he's describing now the Nazis have left Auschwitz. They're gone. No one knows exactly what's happening. Everyone who could walk was taken on a death march, and there's this group of people left in the camp. So what happens? At that moment, Taranowski, a Franco-Pole of 23 with typhus, proposed, listen to this, to the others, that each of them offer a slice of bread to us three who had been working. And so it was agreed. Only a day before, says Levy, this would have been inconceivable. The law of the camp said, eat your own bread, and if you can, that of your neighbor. To do otherwise would have been suicidal. The offer of sharing bread was the first human gesture that occurred among us. I believe that moment can be dated as the beginning of the change by which we who had not died slowly changed from prisoners to men again. And Rabbi Sachs writes, sharing food is the first act through which slaves become free human beings. One who fears tomorrow does not offer his bread to others, but one who is willing to divide his food with a stranger has already shown himself capable of fellowship and faith, the two things from which hope is born. That is why we begin the Seder by inviting others to join us. This is how we turn affliction into freedom. The definition of freedom is the ability to think beyond ourselves, is the ability to become self-transcendent people. This sounds like a simple lesson, but the truth is, if we're honest, we live in a very self-centered and egocentric society. Society teaches us that the goal is, I need to be happy. That's the goal. My happiness is of paramount importance. What's most important in life is that I'm comfortable and I'm happy. Because my happiness is most of greatest importance, your needs are much more secondary. That is counterintuitive to our national hashkafa, to our national outlook. In our national outlook, is my happiness is only complete if I find a way to give to you. Only if I find some way to transcend myself and be there for you can I truly be a happy individual. We begin the Seder ultimately with this mock invitation. We begin the Seder recognizing that there are those who are in servitude even if we feel totally free. We begin the Seder by recognizing that there are those who may be in the midst of difficulties even if my life is in perfect order. Why? Because that's what freedom means. The slave is fully focused on him or herself. The free person has the ability to think about the collective. And I often thought that this idea of freedom being the ability to be there for the other is such an empowering concept. Because the truth is, we live in a world where we see so many things that are broken. We see people who are broken. We see circumstances that are broken. We see situations that are broken. Often we think that we're powerless to affect change. Now, there's a beautiful insight by the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh. The Baal Shem Tov comments on a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, in Ethics of Our Fathers, says, "Histakel begimel dvarim, viata balidena v'dechet." Right? Go ahead and look at three things, and you will not come to sin. And the Mishnah goes on. It's actually two different gersos in the Mishnah, two different versions. But one version says, "Da malam alam mincha." Know what is above you. Know what is above you. Ayin roa, a seeing eye. Ozen shoma'as, an attentive ear. V'chol ma'asecha b'sefer nechtavin. And everything that you do is written down, is recorded. And so again, on a simple level, what is the Mishnah teaching us? Be careful with how you act, because whatever you do is recorded. God sees and hears everything. The Baal Shem Tov says a little bit differently. The Baal Shem Tov says, Da malam alam imcha. Do you want to know, I ever wonder, like, what is God's expectation of us? Right? Do you ever think about this for a little bit? Right? What does God want from us? God obviously put us here in this world to accomplish something. So what is it that he wants us to accomplish? So of course, we often wish, it would be wonderful if like you were born with a post-it note on your forehead. Right? A divine to-do list. Here's what you have to accomplish between birth and death at 120. Here are all the things you have to do. But of course, again, we're not born with that. The greatest challenge of life is to try to intuit, what does God want of us? So the Baal Shem Tov says something amazing. He says, there's one way to figure out what God wants of us. Ayin roa, if you see something, ozin shomas, or you hear about something, God only puts things in your ocular view. God only puts things in your auditory purview because he wants you to know about them. And he only wants you to know about them because he feels that you could affect change. You know, when we hear about something that is broken in life, or a person that's broken, or a situation that's broken, often what we do is we let out a krechts, nebuch, so sad, right? And maybe I'll say, okay, I'm going to daven for you. And davening for people, praying for people is an incredible, incredible thing. But you know, sometimes you could do more than pray. Sometimes you could actively roll up your sleeves and help. And if you say to yourself, well, I can't do anything to affect change, it's not true, says the Baal Shem Tov. If you heard about the situation, or you saw the situation, God put that in your ocular or auditory purview to tell you that you have the ability to affect change. To tell you that some way, somehow, you have the ability to address the situation. That, my friends, is freedom. Freedom is the ability to recognize that when you see something or you see someone or you see a situation that is broken, you don't just let out the krechts, but you say to yourself, I am free. And my freedom enables me to help. My freedom enables me to fix. My freedom enables me to be God's right-hand man. And somehow trying to right the imperfections of the world that we see all around us. That's freedom. The slave retreats into himself. The slave, when he sees something broken, says to himself, can't do anything about that. I got my own problems to worry about. Someone else is going to have to solve that one. The free man understands, yes, I have to worry about my own issues, but I have the freedom and ability to help. And if I heard about the problem, if I saw the problem, if I saw that which is in a state of disrepair, then I have the ability to go ahead and fix it some way, somehow. This is the first message that the rabbis wanted to teach us about freedom. And so they decided to go ahead and put it in Halach Ma'anya. It's not a real invitation. It's a mock invitation. But just to reinforce this simple idea that freedom means the ability to give. Freedom means the ability to do for the other. Freedom means the ability to help the other fix themselves or fix their circumstances. Freedom means the ability to not just be a passive person on the stage of life, but it means that I have the ability to roll up my sleeves and somehow affect change, not just in my own life, but in the lives of others. But I just want to end off with one last piece, going in a little bit of a different direction just for one moment, because this is a beautiful insight. But there's one other glaring problem with Halach Ma'anya. What's the glaring problem? If you'll notice again, it says, Hashata Hacha, Lashana Haba Barad Yisrael. This year we're here. Next year we'll be in the land of Israel. Hashata Avdi, this year we're slaves. Next year we'll be free. Right, next year we'll be free. So it always bothered me. What bothers me? I mean, you don't know me well enough to know what bothers me. There's plenty that bothers me. But what bothers me about this is, why next year? You know, part of the incredible, overwhelming nature of the Pesach Seder is really summed up in a profound rabbinic phrase, which is, Yeshuas Hashem Keheref Ayin. The salvation of God comes about in the blink of an eye. You know, we think Egyptian servitude went on for a long time. It did. It was 210 years. But amazingly enough, we became free literally in the course of a couple of hours. 210 years of servitude ended within just a few hours. The salvation of God comes fast and swift. So it's always bothered me. This year I'm a slave, next year I'm free. This year I'm here, next year I'll be in Yerushalayim. Why not say, today I'm a slave, tomorrow I'll be free. Right? Today I'm here, tomorrow I can be in Yerushalayim. So the Baal Shem Tov points out so beautifully, the Maggid of Mezrich also echoes this same sentiment, that we're trying to remind ourselves that change in life is often gradual. See, sometimes we want the quick fix. Sometimes you want to change things, and you want to change things now. And this applies in many areas of life. Sometimes a person has shalom bayis, has marital issues. And again, I just want a quick fix for it now. I have difficulty with my kids, so I need a quick fix. I need an answer now. I'm challenged with my spirituality. Give me that booster shot of spirituality now. We want the fix, and we want it now. But the truth is, that's not the way life works. More often than not, change is gradual. More often than not, change takes time. And so right after we reinforce within ourselves and we gird ourselves with the hope and the optimism and the strength that we could affect change, not just in our own lives, but in the lives of others, we then say, Hashata avdi l'shana ba b'nei chorin. This year it's like this. Next year it could be something different. This year we're here. Next year somewhere else. Yes, we have the ability to be agents of change, but sometimes we have to be patient with that change. Sometimes we have to be patient with that change within ourselves. Sometimes we have to be patient in that change within others. Sometimes we have to be patient with that change in our world. We have the incredible gift, the incredible opportunity, and the incredible koach to bring about change, but we must be patient and understand that often dramatic change takes time. So if you bring this all together, it turns out that really, all you have to say in the Pesach Seder is this first little paragraph, right? And it has everything. I mean, you have to eat your matzah and drink your four cups also. But amazingly enough, almost the entirety, everything we're supposed to get from the Pesach Seder can be gleaned from this opening paragraph of Halach Ma'anya. From this one little paragraph, we stoke the anticipatory fire for messianic redemption, for the third temple. We use the verbiage that our ancestors used thousands of years ago, and we use it now to remind ourselves that salvation is sure to come, the Beis Hamikdash is sure to come, Mashiach is sure to come. We go ahead, and with this simple mock invitation, we remind ourselves that the purpose of freedom is not to be self-serving, but the purpose of freedom is to be transcendent. The purpose of freedom is to give others. With this little phrase of Hashata Avdi L'Shana Ba B'nei Chorin, we are reminded that we can't just think about ourselves. Even if we're privileged to have a life where everything is in order, even if we're privileged to have a life where Baruch Hashem, everything is perfect, we must always keep in mind those who are struggling. And not just keep them in mind, but try to figure out what we can actively do to ameliorate the difficulties, struggles, and suffering of the other. Because we are free. And as free people, we have the ability to affect change. But with all of this talk, and with all of this ability to affect change, we must always recognize that we have to be patient, that change is often gradual. Whether it's change within ourselves, whether it's change within the other, whether it's change within our people, or whether it's change within mankind, change does occur, especially if you're persistent, especially if you keep plugging away at it. But often it just takes time to unfold. This is the message of Pesach. This is the message of the Lel HaSeder. So as we go into Pesach, with all of the, I'm sure, frenetic activity that we are all engaged in, with all the physical and material preparations that we have to take, that we have to make, to get ready for this magnificent Yom Tov, we have to go in with an incredible sense of hope and optimism. We are agents of change. If there are things within our own lives that we don't like, don't be a victim, but be an agent of change. If something needs to change, if something needs to be different, you have the koach, you have the power to change it. If you see others around you who have difficulties, you don't just need to krechts and daven, but you could roll up your sleeves and do something to help. We are given not just the gift of freedom, but we're given the gift to partner with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to partner with God and become true agents of change. May we be privileged to internalize this lesson, to live this lesson, and may we all be privileged to affect change, big and small, over the Yom Tov of Pesach and over the years to come. Thank you.